Energy Singularity, the Event Horizon Podcast, a podcast where energy blockchain visionaries discuss the future of energy. Join me, Kevin O'Donovan, as I chat with some of the world's leading visionaries to take a realistic view as to what's really going on. In the past few episodes, when it comes to blockchain and energy, the topics of policy and regulation keep coming up. So in episode 3, to better understand energy policy and energy regulation, I'll be joined by Catherine Hamilton, chair of 38 North Solutions, and Professor Jean-Michel Gachon, the director of the Florence School of Regulation. Now, I recorded the chats with Catherine and Jean-Michel individually, and to decide on the order, I actually tossed a coin. So first up, we'll get the US perspective. Welcome, Catherine.
Hi, Kevin. Nice to be here.
So Catherine, for people who may not know you, can you do a quick introduction?
Absolutely. The first part of my career, I was in fact not doing anything on policy or regulation at all. I was designing grids at an electric utility here in the US. I did that for about 10 years, and then I worked at the National Renewable Energy Laboratory in Colorado, really doing technology before I ever shifted over to public policy. And when I moved over to public policy, I was able to take that understanding of how the grid works into all the other jobs I had, which included running GridWise Alliance, working for Good Energies, which was a private equity company, and now having my consultancy, which really does focus on public policy.
And that's with 38 North Solutions. So what kind of things do you get up to there?
Yeah, so our consultancy focuses all on clean energy and innovation and this energy transition. So we work with both large multinational corporations as well as startups that are really innovating in this space to try to help them understand that public policy can be life or death. No matter the size of your company, if you don't think about public policy, you can really get in trouble.
Now that is so true. When I started working in the energy industry in my role with Intel, I quickly copped on that there was a lot more to the whole world of energy policy and regulatory frameworks than I had imagined. And in working with energy companies in the US, started to figure out very quickly that the energy policy and regulatory frameworks in all the states are different. And even within a state, they can be very different from city to city. So how is energy policy structured in the US?
It's complicated. So you're right. There are 50 states and each one is totally different. Not only that, even the utility models are different. So there are cooperative utilities, there are municipal utilities, there are investor-owned utilities, and each utility may have a slightly different model where they're maybe on the distribution side or maybe they're fully integrated and own transmission and generation as well. In addition to the 50 states, which have different regulatory constructs, but also different public policies, depending on what their state leadership is moving forward. So their state legislature, their governor, they will come up with public policies that then decide what their state energy policy is going to be. In addition to that, we have regional grids, and all of those regional grids are managed by system operators. And those are regulated federally by the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, one of my favorite federal agencies, that really is like the air traffic controller to make sure that all of the energy markets are working, whether all the different types of wholesale markets, whether they're the energy markets or capacity markets or ancillary services markets. So you have these grids, you have states, and then you have even sub-state regulation. So it is a very complicated system, and a company that's starting out developing something that is incredibly interesting and potentially very useful may find an inability to actually have it be used simply because of this regulatory construct.
I guess complicated is one word you can use to describe that. But it is true, and I work with a lot of startups, and I often hear from the startups, but we have a great innovative technology and we can help solve a lot of these problems and create new business models and, but the regulator won't allow me. And I tried to explain to them that, as you mentioned, a lot of the regulation comes from the public policy. So you got to understand where the public policy is coming from, because public policy leads to, as you say, energy policy and.
And what we have to realize is the grid is there. It was originally built to make sure that we had safe, affordable, reliable electricity. And so the US was able to deploy that. Of course, there are a billion people, the rest of the world, who don't have that. But we have a big system in the United States that has been operated. And there are certain laws of physics that you can't get around. So you have to do certain things to make sure that the system operates effectively. But part of the issue may simply be, what are utilities being asked to do and what are they going to be rewarded for doing?
Utilities are being asked to do what they were always asked to do. And unless their goals and their metrics change, then they'll, if I was a utility, I'd keep doing what I'm asked to do as well. Do you see that changing, or is there any examples of that happening?
So I look at a state like Hawaii. Allow our utilities to be paid not based on having assets, but having performance metrics. So they're doing sort of the first performance-based rates in the US. They're going to test these out and see how they work and see if the utility is incentivized to do things differently. They'll still operate the grid in a safe and reliable way, but they will instead be asked to be rated on other types of performance metrics as well. And I would say one of those metrics, and this is something that blockchain could potentially be very helpful on, is going to be resilience. So in the future, as we think about a grid that you talked about reliability, yes, but with all these wildfires in California and hurricanes and these disasters that are ever increasing, we have to have systems that not only fail quickly, but come back very quickly. And often those systems are the most distributed systems.
Now, that's a great point on the whole distributed systems or the whole decentralization of the energy system that's happening today. But if I'm a regulator, I'm not dealing with technology day in and day out, and yet I'll have all of these startups and different vendors and different people coming at me, or I just simply open the newspaper and I'm reading about all these new technologies and all this new stuff. So where do the regulators, how do they keep up with the pace of change today?
That is a great question. And I really think they do rely on people showing up and talking about these technologies, because for the most part, regulators hear from their utilities who are regulated, and they hear from interest groups. So they may hear from environmental groups or consumer advocates, but they don't always hear from those people who are actually innovating. And innovation has become so much more democratized. So it used to be that utilities were the innovators, and now innovation is coming so much from outside of the utility space. And so it is really important for innovators to get in front of the regulatory bodies and talk about what they're doing, even just from an educational standpoint, to say, here's what we're doing, here are the possibilities, and here's how we need to think about it. So a lot of our statutes, our standards, were not written with innovation even contemplated. So some of this is about, it's not even written, our standards and our statutes aren't even written with a lot of these technologies in mind. So how do we address that? And then how do we think about how utilities are able to be paid? This is one of the biggest issues. Is a regulator's job is to decide how a utility gets paid for what it does. And the way most utilities in the US are paid is by having assets. So they'll build a power plant, they'll mortgage that plant, and the consumer will pay for that over time, and the shareholder will reap the benefits, and they're allowed a certain rate of return for that. But if you're not building things, if you're just moving things around and managing energy better and allowing more efficient trading, how is that compensated for? Who gets to be compensated? Who wins? Who benefits? What are the values and who benefits? And these are all questions the regulators have to ask every single day as they confront innovation.
Now, when it comes to innovation, I think it's fair to say that blockchain technology fits into the innovation bucket. But that said, as we've discussed in a couple of the previous episodes, there's been so much hype and so much, and sometimes hysteria, around what blockchain can and can't do and what it's going to do, and that there's a bit of frustration out there. Now, when it comes to the world of energy policy and regulation, do you think people understand what blockchain technology is all about?
I do think that there's a lack of understanding of the difference the different types of blockchains and what they really, what it really does and what the different models are. So there has been confusion over whether it's crypto or if it's an energy trading platform or a peer-to-peer network. So I do think there's a bit of misunderstanding. But I will tell you, policymakers are paying attention. And I did a little bit of digging around on the states in the US. In 2015, one state had any kind of legislative discussion at all about blockchain. In 2016, two states, so two pieces of legislation. In 2017, there were eight pieces of legislation. Last year, there were 37 pieces of legislation about blockchain. And a lot of this was simply clarifying definitions. It was clarifying that the criminal code would need to also include, you know, misdeeds on blockchain or cyber issues. There were, you know, different voter protections that were put into place regarding the blockchain information. A lot of this is going to enable blockchain, but it was very much about, let's figure out what this is and try to dissect it and try to put public policy into place that's going to allow it to move forward, but also in, you know, sort of insert it into all the existing code structures that we have. So it is moving forward, but a lot of this really is about figuring out what does this really mean and who's in charge of it.
That is interesting to see blockchain, let's say, on the regulatory framework agendas. Now, when it comes to, well, what does it mean? Again, in a bunch of the previous episodes, we've spoken a lot about many of the startups and many of the ideas out there around how blockchain is an enabler for peer-to-peer energy markets. But there's a lot of regulatory hurdles to overcome before peer-to-peer becomes a reality or mainstream for everybody. What's the current status of people doing peer-to-peer or peer-to-peer popping up in the US energy policy or regulatory framework right now?
So right now, it just really is very rare. Yes, there are some experiments and proofs of concept, but there are a couple of different things there. One is, do people really want to do that? Is it something that consumers are asking for and are really interested in doing? So then you might find a community in which some of the folks are really interested and some, you know, to varying degrees. But then you have to figure out, now, how does this interact with the system that's currently there? And how does it actually bring benefit? So yes, in theory, the distribution side, the consumer side should be a resource. I mean, in a perfect world, the consumer side and the generation side are fungible, where everything is traded back and forth, and that everything, you know, the load side is also a resource in addition to the generation side. And if you can do that, you will really balance everything out, potentially have, you know, 100% renewables because you have a load side that is balancing it in a very sophisticated way. But we're not there yet. And part of it is finding the market for where that will work. And part of it is really trying to figure out, how do we make this work within the existing regulatory construct, or how do we change that so that it can work?
Now, what I found fascinating over the past 18 months, I've often found myself being the bridging the gap between, let's say, the traditional point of view that, well, the regulations are there for a reason and, you know, the grid is not a copper plate, you know, and do you not understand the laws of physics? And on the other side, we'll have a bunch of completely new, innovative, totally different thinking about, but we can do all these new things and we need to be agile and change things. And if it doesn't work, we'll try again. So to me, it's like, you know, it's got to do with the whole demographic change, the changing workforce, different ideas, different generations. And in some ways, it's kind of a cultural clash between the old ways of doing things and the new ways. And I often find myself sitting in the middle. Do you see this, I don't know, cultural clash going on?
There is a bit of a culture clash, I would say, or at least some need to make sure that everybody is brought along. So you can't just go and change the code. I mean, when you say we can just change the code, that requires having to go and find legislators in a given state or in, you know, in the US Congress that are willing to consider that and understand why would you need to change the code? How do you do that? Are there detractors? Are there people who are going to come in and say, no, don't do that. We need things the way they've always been for safety, for reliability, all these other reasons. So trying to just hack the system is more difficult unless you have a plan to do it. And I would say there are some innovators who've been able to get around and figure out how to get things deployed in ways that are less structured than, you know, going through the traditional process. But more often than not, there ends up being a hang up somewhere on the regulatory front. And so trying to figure out how do we move, because we really have to move faster, okay? And one of the things we know is that we have to make an energy transition a lot faster than we thought we did. And so how do we move really, really fast while ensuring that regulation moves along too, because it is by nature not particularly speedy. So how do we make sure that we do this in a system that could really gum things up and try to get things to move quickly? So you have to make regulators really comfortable with whatever you're deploying. This is something that you know how to do. This is something that is not from outer space. It's something that will help consumers, help the utility, help the innovator, and help the regulator. So, you know, you really have to create this narrative that allows for speed of deployment in a system that's not built for speed.
Now, recently here in Europe at the InnoGrid conference up in Brussels, and that's run by INSOE, the European Network of Transmission System Operators, and the European Distribution System Operators for Smart Grids, EDSO, they put out a proposal of 6 points at the end calling for some changes around the whole grid infrastructure. And one of those was calling for serious development of regulatory sandboxes here in Europe in coordination with the regulators, but defined areas, locations, cities, whatever, where companies, be they the TSOs, DSOs, startups, utilities, whatever, that they can go off and start trying new things, but in a sandbox.
Yeah, it makes sense that that's happening in Europe. In Germany, they allow aggregation, which in a lot of states in the US, aggregators are not allowed to participate and bring services to the grid.
Now, before we finish up, is there anything, Catherine, that we haven't mentioned yet that you think we should bring up?
So one thing we really need to think about is that a lot of people in the US even do not have broadband. They don't have any internet. And I think in order to really move forward on a lot of these technology solutions, blockchain and others, we need to make sure that we bring everybody along and that every parts of our society and all communities are engaged. Yes, we can do tiny pieces in Brooklyn, New York, but that is a very different subsector than rural Appalachia. So I think we need to think about that as we start deploying in a real way all these technologies. We need to consider who even has access to just the fundamental ability to access information. And I just want to make sure that as we move forward on innovation and an energy transition, as we speed up, that we're not leaving a lot of people behind because we haven't been thinking about them.
Yeah, we can get so caught up in the technology and the capabilities and all the cool stuff that, yeah, sometimes the social consequences or the value that it brings to all of society can get left behind. Now, given that this whole world of energy policy and regulation is pretty complex and it's all links back to public policy and politics and society, do you think there'll be any big changes in 12 months' time? Or will we all still be chatting about this and nothing's getting done?
Well, you can bet we'll still be chatting about everything, but hopefully some things have changed too. So I do think that regulators are starting to ask more questions about innovation. I think that utilities are trying to think of non-wireless alternatives. So how do we avoid having to build a substation and instead do services that will avoid that?
Well, it certainly is a fascinating topic. Thank you very much for taking the time to have a chat today, Catherine.
Thank you so much, Kevin. This has really been a real pleasure.
And now for the EU perspective. Welcome, Jean-Michel.
Welcome, Kevin.
Jean-Michel, for people that may not know you, can you do a quick introduction?
Yeah, of course. I'm an economist. I did enter into open energy markets about 30 years ago. 15 years ago, I did enter into renewables coming to become key in energy markets. And today we have both renewables and digitalization popping everywhere. So we do not only have markets, we have markets plus renewables plus digitalization. It's become very exciting and deeply revolutionizing everything I knew since 30 years.
And what do you do at the Florence School of Regulation?
It's a good question, Kevin. We are a school, so basically we do training, but we do training for professionals, for people already working, having concrete issues to discuss. They are mainly regulators, independent administration. They are also from governments or European Commission. They are also from companies. And since a few years, also NGOs, because all the society has to be involved, because sustainability, decarbonizing is an issue for everybody, including for you, Kevin.
It certainly is. And that's a topic we'll cover in a further conversation with yourself for another episode, where we'll talk a lot about the whole sustainability. And you know, my own personal opinion is that it's up to each one of us to do our bit. So Jean-Michel, when it comes to energy policy and energy regulation and energy markets, how do you explain all this to people?
There is three different layers of discussion. We have the markets, we have the grids, we have the operation of the grids. In the markets, what we call, I will speak only for electricity, but if we take electricity, what we call the market for electricity, is only a meeting to agree on prices. If we take Nord Pool or EEX, there are places to meet and to agree on prices. And when the prices are set, the market is closed, it's finished. But nothing has been delivered, nothing has been produced. If we accept that what we call electricity system is a grid linking producers and consumers, we will very quickly understand what are the change today and tomorrow about. If we have big generators, enormous generators, they need big grids to evacuate the power and to go to consumption, as we consumers are not so big, even if the consumer is a supermarket, it's not that big. We need a distribution grid which fragments the big amount of energy produced into smaller flows. So all the rules have been conceived for wholesale market, coal plants, nuclear plants, transmitting electricity from France to Italy, from Germany to Denmark, but they do not address the issues, they do not address the new thing, which is the small production being put inside the consumption. And here, we have to be fair because we have to think what is good in the fact that the production is made exactly inside the consumption. What is good into the fact that a consumer will take care of the production, in the fact that a consumer can be interested by a small producer being nearby in the same municipality or not that far. These people may also belong to a cooperative. This cooperative may welcome some people being not rich at all, but having a good spirit vis-à-vis the society, and they have no money, okay, but they are good citizens, and they want to take part of the renewable production, they want to take part of the better adaptation of individual consumption and the production of renewable, so they want to be part of the cooperative, so what we call today an energy community. So we have to think about all of this because, as you know, that we will need most of the citizens on board to do the energy transition, But we have to think how to welcome initiatives, individual actions, local actions being not individual, but being of a small size, 500 people, 200 people, 800 people. So all the system has to be thought again, reanalyzed again, to give a fair chance of a new type of production and a new type of linking of production with consumption, to give them a fair chance.
I don't know how many meetings I've been in where I've seen startups talking about entering the energy market for peer-to-peer. And to your point, where the guys on the other side of the table are used to the energy market you've just described, where they set the price for bulk power. And these people talk past each other and both are convinced that the other side is clueless. But then the challenge is, how do we as a society come up with an energy market and energy policy and energy regulation that enables that market to give everybody a fair chance, whether they're just a consumer, whether they're a prosumer, and for the existing stakeholders in the grid, how they also get a fair chance, because the grid that exists today isn't going to go away in the morning. So the challenge ahead of us is to come up with an energy market that's fair for all, supports multiple different business models. And while I'm a huge believer in technology, technology is not the answer here. Technology is simply an enabler for making all this happen.
Yeah, because the technology is exactly what you said. It's an enabler. It's something permitting to do something. Something permitting to do something else. And the key change I am seeing in energy markets, particularly electricity, is that we are coming from the classical model, big assets, enormous amount of money, and they have to be recuperated via big amount of revenues. So enormous market strategies to get the revenues. And this is common between, say, offshore wind and nuclear. They are so big as investment. Of course, nuclear is much bigger than offshore wind, but offshore wind, nevertheless, is about billions of investment. And they need to know if they will get their money. That's the key issue. That's why offshore wind is going with guaranteed revenues. The same like nuclear is going with guaranteed revenues. And we have a totally different world also, enormously growing. And this other world is not about the assets. It's about the characteristics of the products. How can we guarantee to individuals, to different people, that they will get a different characteristic, a particular product, which will fit well with their particular way of consumption, their particular type of consumption? And of course, this is very open to digitalization, because digitalization is a way of harvesting detailed information and guaranteeing the detailed information. So particular product characteristic can be conveyed to individuals and guaranteed. And then new exchange can happen, and then new business model can happen. But in this new world, the world of particular characteristics for particular consumers, the what we call the market, but it's better to say exchange for the moment. This new exchange has to be tested, because we are testing new characteristics of the products for particular consumers. So we have to test if they are pleased with the characteristic. We have to test if they are so pleased that they will give enough money to the particular entrepreneurs pushing particular characteristics to make them a bargain, to make them sustainable. And we see that we are leaving big assets, big money, to smaller assets, because the asset will be mainly how to harvest the information, how to guarantee it to individual actors or smaller actors. And the question is, do they complement each other? Do they block each other? And are the rules we use to run markets, the rules we use to run the grid, the transmission grid or the distribution grid, are all these rules, most of the time being public rules, coming from public authorities, are these rules neutral? Because, of course, we can say that today we have big plants, so we have big transmission grids, so we have a certain way of managing the distribution grids, but we cannot continue in this way for centuries if it is not so expensive to open to new decentralized players.
Now, when it comes to blockchain in the energy industry, one of the key topics for the past 2 years has been around how blockchain technology can be an enabler for peer-to-peer energy markets. Now, within the European Union and the whole energy union, there's been a lot of discussion around energy communities. So can you explain to us what an energy community is and what's the current state of energy community policy and regulation here in Europe?
European Commission, beginning of winter 2016, did put on the table the concept of energy community. The fact that consumers have the right to unite and they can unite with producers, being themselves or only part of themselves are producers, and then they have to be considered together as a new player. And then they have rights, because they will be legally a new player. So they did put it as a proposal for the European law. The European law has to be adopted by the Council, which is a gathering of the ministers of energy of the 28 countries. On the side of the Council, the ministers of energy, seeing that it's such a change that citizens can self-organize, either not for profit or even implicit profit, to protect the utilities, many countries did say, if you want to get energy community valid at European level, we will say no. And if they say no, Parliament cannot get it. So they meet several times, and finally the Council did say, if you change the European law saying that energy community is welcome, but each country will organize it its own way, we will agree to vote. Then the parliament did accept to get it voted. So each country will choose what is the community, how it is organized. So if a country wants to block energy communities, they will block. They can block by regulation only.
Well, the EU does work in mysterious ways at times. You know, today we often hear people complaining that the EU is too powerful and taking too much control and setting all the rules and regulations. I think sometimes people should sit back and actually figure out how it all works and, you know, just go look at the energy policy and might learn something. But that's a conversation for a whole different day. And before we wrap up, is there any topic or item that we didn't bring up?
I would like to come back to the fact that if we seriously decentralize, we give to individuals the picture of what they do. They do not know what they do. Even me, I do not know what is my heater doing. I have no idea what is my computer doing. We do not know. So, as we do not know, but it's a bit easy to think that we do not do much wrong things because we do that what everybody does, what we have always done. So if we are able to make information available and user friendly in a simple manner, we will permit more people to understand and more people to adapt what the individual do and what they permit public decision makers to allow or to prohibit. And this is key. We can come back to the car. My car is not telling me how much I pollute, which is very strange because A car with a good computer should be able to tell you, Jean-Michel, this month you did consume this amount of diesel, but according to the way you drive, that's the exact amount of CO2 you did emit. And I'm sorry, Jean-Michel, but in your neighborhood, you are the worst. They are all better than you. So if we take this serious, we should change the knowledge, the understanding, and it will inevitably have consequences.
For people that know me, they'll often hear me say, you know, technology is the easy bit. It's when you get around to energy policy, energy regulation, changing human behavior, the politics, that's the really hard bit. But there is a lot going on. So where do you think we'll be in 12 months' time? Or what are the key priorities for the next 12 months?
12 months, for me, the biggest battle will be about energy communities. We have to keep a space open in the society for citizens' initiatives and for a linkage between consuming and producing. We do not have to let energy ministers do what they want with energy communities. They have to respect the citizens' rights, and they have to respect the communities' rights, the municipalities, the districts, the neighborhood. And for me, this is the key.
Jean-Michel, thank you so much.
Great pleasure, Kevin.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Energy Singularity. Please do give us a review, subscribe to receive future episodes, and please do join the conversation and share your own thoughts with us via social media. You can find details on all our social media accounts in the show notes. And be sure to visit the event site, eventhorizonsummit.com, to find out all the latest and greatest about the upcoming event. And I hope to see you all at the Event Horizon Summit this June in Berlin.